Welcome to The Truth in This Art. I am your host, Rob Lee. Thank you for tuning into my conversations at the intersection of arts, culture, and of course, community. And a big thank you to the Robert W. Deutsch Foundation for supporting and sponsoring this podcast. Thank you. Today, I am thrilled to welcome my next guest, an interdisciplinary artist from the greatest city in America. That's Baltimore, of course. Their artistry is not only a form of expression, but a powerful dialogue on race, identity, and social justice. They're working to heal the Black congregation. Please welcome Desmond Beach. Welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, man. Good evening. Well, I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Thank you for coming on or what have you. And I don't know why. Like, usually I say this, you're not wearing them currently, but I feel like you wear glasses. Are you a glasses guy?
I am, and I left them back home.
Usually I like to greet my fellow bespectacled individuals, you know, us sort of art and art adjacent folks that have the four eyes, you know, we see things in a different way.
Yeah, definitely. I have them.
I have three different pair, and it's like the ones that are tiny and like almost tortoise shell, I wear them when I go to galleries, and I wear them. I'm going for an image. And when I have to lock in a day job, I have a very analytical day job. So I wear the glasses that almost look like I got someone in the scope.
Okay.
My glasses look like my personality, depending on what I'm doing.
Yeah. I wear them for my really serious moments. And I just forgot the one on my dresser when I walked out before I left, when I got to my plane.
I dig it. It's just like, sometimes you got to get your thing. You got to go. It's like, glasses be damned.
Right.
All right. You know, and thank you again for coming on and making the time. It's always like a privilege to, and I say this all the time, it's always a privilege to speak with people who are very talented so I can glean just a little bit of the talent off of you all. So thank you for that. Thank you for allowing me to be a talent vampire. And before we get too deep into the conversation, you know, we've talked a little bit here. I want to give you the space and the opportunity to introduce yourself in your own words. I find often, you know, you get online, you find these different artist statements and bios. Sometimes they're out of date. Sometimes they don't really get to the heart of who the person is. So I want to give you that space to introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your creative work.
Yeah, well, I always have to start by saying I am from the greatest city in America, and that city is Baltimore. Yeah. I am from the great city of Baltimore, but I currently live right now in New York City. I'm a practicing artist, and my work is really centered around bringing healing to the Black community. I like to call it the Black congregation because I grew up in the church. And so a lot of language I use is like churchy language or language that I grew up around. And so the Black congregation is what I call all of us Black people, you know? The work is really, I got to be an artist because it's the language I feel most comfortable in. It's the way that I can articulate my perspective and my point of view like no other. And so I'm just this little Black boy from Baltimore that's now living in New York, making work about healing Black people and bringing a sense of purpose and joy to the community. Yeah, so I'm, you know, middle son of three boys, really influenced by living in Baltimore. Baltimore is like in my DNA, you know, it's who I am, it's how I see the world. And I would have no other way. Like, yeah. Baltimore made me Baltimore proud.
I love that. I love it. I'm in that middle spot. So when I saw that, I was just like, you get it. It's like that thing of like, you're not getting all the attention as the youngest, but then like the oldest, it's just like, all right, cool. I guess I'm just going to sit here.
Yeah. I would do my own thing, make my own path, my own way. Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
So I'm reading in, you know, and correct me if I'm wrong here. I see like multiple areas that you're working. I see sculpture, I see painting, it's this whole sort of interdisciplinary and like multidisciplinary like sort of flavor here. So can you, you know, speak on that and give us a little peek into like your process, perhaps what you're currently working on, what you most recently worked on?
Yeah, well, the reason that is because there's not just one medium that I feel serves the right purpose to like articulate my point of view at times, right? And so there might be moments of performance where I have to like enter into a space and make that space holy and sanctify it in order to receive the ancestor spirits, right? You know, tying back to like my upbringing in church, right? And so, or maybe there are times I have to do a drawing, I have to do a painting, I have to make a sculpture. It really is based on what I'm trying to convey to people and what medium I think best serves that. So in undergrad, like I was a general fine arts major at MICA. And so I took tons of classes in sculpture, in fiber arts, in drawing and painting. And so those are the means I feel most comfortable in articulating my point of view. But for grad school, I was a sculpture major. I went to a graduate sculpture program. And so this idea of making objects that sit in space and take up space, or even creating installations, feels like second nature to me, right? And for me, this is not the case for all artists, but for me, I find it limiting if I only operated in one medium, if I only was someone who did fiber-based work, if I was only someone who did photography. Honestly, that would make me a little bored. I would get bored with the idea of working the same medium over and over again. But I think that sometimes certain messages, certain ideas, certain things come across stronger, depending on the medium that they're in, right? So for a while, I was doing a lot of work about honoring Black people in death. You know, like growing up in Baltimore, there was a lot of, and I hate to even say this because it is such a stereotype about Baltimore, that it's such a violent place. But growing up as a teenager, I had friends who were like killed, you know, was at the hands of other people or by the hands of the police. And so I was making all this work that was trying to address the hurt and the mourning that was happening. So I was making these sculptures of these figures that were laying on the ground in this rest-like state, right? And so could that have been a drawing or painting? Yes, but I felt that it was more poignant. It was more immediate to have it be a sculpture, to actually see the physicality of somebody's body like on the ground. Yeah. To me was more impactful, right? So I think I pick mediums or I work within different mediums based on how I think the themes or messages of the work will come across. And I just feel really comfortable combining them together, combining mixed media, sculpture, performance all together within the experience. So that's why I do it. You know, like I often say I'm a project-based artist. And so I work based on projects, and projects dictate to me the mediums that I use.
Gotcha. That helps. And having something that's like sort of your own way of going about it, like, you know, I would imagine you touched on it, like getting bored if it was just the one thing. And, you know, I hear that in jobs, I hear that in sort of even in doing this, you know, like the goal is this many episodes and I'm going to talk to these different people. And it's like, why don't you just do the same interview over and over again? I was like, I wouldn't want to do it. Or
right.
It's, and I was talking to one of my students, cause I too do the education thing. I was talking to one of my students today about sort of failure and like that serving you and doing really well. And I was making the comparison to like, cause he's a runner, making the comparison to like failing at something like physically. And it's like, you know, you're going to have this progression, but eventually you failed at one point before you got to that next stage. And now you might look back at that point where you failed and it's like, that's light work. But part of it is, I think that drives it is not becoming bored. If you just ran the same 2 miles every day, you're like, oh, okay, there's the mailbox that I, you know, and there's the part, the ground that I trip over each time. And there's nothing exciting about that. And I think, you know, because of the school I was teaching in, it's, you know, an art school, you know, so we're talking about that. And he's like, oh, you see like the light bulb go off. He's like,
yeah,
oh,
yeah.
So I'm doing this. And I was like, yeah. So what part of Baltimore again?
I grew up on the west side. I grew up in like the Park Heights, Woodland area of Baltimore. Okay. Is where I grew up.
Okay, so that's okay. You know, we got to do the scene check sometimes because I got some Owens Millions that throw out there. Say, like, I'm from Baltimore. You are not.
That is not Baltimore. You're in the suburbs, brother. You're in the suburbs.
I love it. So I see in there, and definitely we're going to dive back in because I want to ask a bit about you know, sort of choosing to work in different sizes too. Like, you know, that might hit a different way, like getting that response from a person or someone that's viewing it, or even the response from yourself. Like, damn, I was able to, you know, present this idea in this way and in this format. But before I go to that, I want to ask about some of the influences, because I see James Baldwin, I see African storytelling, that those traditions there. How do those elements like kind of show up in your work and like shape your artistic sensibilities, your narratives? Speak a bit about that.
Yeah, well, I am definitely inspired by James Baldwin. I think that his writings are just so profound. The way that he speaks about the Black community and being Black himself and the issues, the trials that we face, but also the victories that we can have as well, is so profound to me, right? And so I think he is one of the greatest scholars and in love of what he writes and how he talks about the human condition. So James Baldwin, yes, is an influence, but I think that I have my art influences like Faith Ringgold, God rest her soul. She just passed away a couple of days ago. Like William Pope L, who is another artist who just passed away as well, who's now an ancestor. So I definitely have like these artists that sit in a place of teaching me aesthetics and composition and what that looks like. But I would really say that my true influence comes from the people in my life, the everyday people. You know, I still think back to all the moments I grew up in my house with my dad and my mom and my brothers and my grandmother, my mom's mother, and how those moments on like Saturday evenings of us like dancing around and like cleaning the house and like them making meals, like how all of that really has influenced how I want people to feel when they see my work, right? It's like how I felt growing up. It's the same thing I'm trying to have people when they walk into a gallery, go into a museum and see my piece. I want them to walk away with that same level of humanity, right? Like I learned so much from growing up in the church I grew up in Baltimore. I spent my entire life in this church. So I made all of my closest friends in this church. It's where I learned how to stand up and be really bold and proclaim the things that matter to me, right? Like I learned that, you know, by watching like the ministers and like my pastor and like my parents' friends. And like, so all those influences really have formed how I make work, right? Like I am always, the time I make a piece, I'm trying to get people to get a glimpse into like how I feel, right? Or I want them to feel seen and affirmed in a way that I did growing up, right? Like that is so important to me. Like I grew up in a house where, this is no lie, and I thank God for the parents that I was given, because I would be in, you know, undergrad, come home for spring break, and my mother would come home from work or my dad would come home from work, and they would find that I had painted the living room a different color, or I had painted their bedroom. Like I would like tape off walls. Mm-hmm. I would spray paint designs. I would take plaster and put it on walls and like try to do fresco type work, right? I'm working wet into plaster, you know, all these things I'm learning about like in school, like I'm using their house to experiment on, right? And my parents never once said to me, don't do that, don't stop. Like I never got yelled at, never got punished for it. Like I took tissue paper and covered all the dining room walls trying to create a texture. I took aluminum foil, like I was trying to do gold leaf, and like did like the ceiling of the dining room, like I was doing like a gold leaf ceiling. Like they never said to me, don't do that, right? And so it's like their willingness to see something in me, right? And to nurture that, and like their level of love and care for me, like that is such a huge influence, right? And so I feel like when I'm making work, I think back to that level of freeness that I had, you know, when I would like paint a room in the house, right? Or collage a wall, right? It, like that same level of play and experimentation and imagination is what I still tap into now in the studio, right? Like, so like, that's a big inspiration. You know, like my mom is a crocheter, so she's always crocheting things, right? Always making blankets. My grandmother would hand piece things as well. And so those are really my biggest influences, you know, like, and I can't even talk about like all of my uncles who were like these civil rights like activists who were always talking about, you know, Black is Beautiful and Black Power and being Black and what that looks like. Like, I knew from the age of like 2 years old, I was Black, right? Like there was no getting around it. And so like having those influences that spoke into my life and fed into my life about, you know, the beauty of being Black and like the richness of who we are, you know, the struggle is part of our story, but it's not all of our story, right? And like, and so having that, growing up in that, every day, you know, while you're forming your ideas and who you are and who you want to be, was so transformative, right? It was so freeing, you know, like, and as an adult, and I think back on it now, how fortunate I was to have a family unit that really supported that. So like, they are my biggest influence. Like they are like, and those ancestors that are always standing behind me, around me, speaking to me, like those are influences that are always pushing me to make stuff and do stuff.
Thank you. That's wonderful. And, you know, I feel like you may have been an unpaid journeyman, you know, kind of tightening up things around old homestead. It's like, yeah, look at that. Oh, look at that scuff. I guess Desmond's going to paint later. Yeah, it is great when you're able to do that. And I can touch on this before moving into this next question, that where I relate, where, you know, as part of that middle child thing, it's like you're almost left to your own devices. It's like, you know, you're fine. You're probably a decent student, all of the stuff. I'm just projecting maybe, but probably a decent student, all of that different stuff. But it's just like, oh, you're interested in something? Cool. I don't have the time for you, but I support you. I don't know what you're doing, but I support you.
Yeah. And
that's kind of what it's been like for me. I wanted to be an artist, an illustrator. And it's like any color pencil, any book, anything like that, here you go. Have at it. Enjoy. Make sure your grades don't lapse. It was kind of that. That was the version of support growing up in my household. But, you know, it was definitely something, I guess, informative, that it's just like, yeah, you're going to be doing this. So pick the thing that you like and kind of ride it out. See where you want to go and, you know, see what you want to do with it. But also being able to balance the two, you know, living this sort of dual lifestyle where I remember the one thing they told me. I don't know if art's going to be the career for you, but you should keep doing it though, or whatever that creative outlet is. That's what the message was for me. With that support being there, I had a an uncle who was like a commercial artist. He passed before I was born, so it was always some of those sort of, man, I really wish you met your uncle. You'd be able to learn so much from him. But it was like that. They recognized seeing someone who was creative.
Yeah, so
it's like that sort of thing. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, I was so fortunate for it. You know, like I never had the, oh, you shouldn't be an artist. You shouldn't make work. Oh, find another job. Like go get one of those good government jobs. Like that was never a conversation that they ever had with me. It was, if you're going to do it well, you know, become skilled at it, you know, and do that thing. So I'm very fortunate to have grown up in a house like that.
That's great.
Yeah.
So I want to know a bit about, this is a newer question that I've been using, and since we're kind of around this topic, within your artistic journey, and it's a journey that's still being written, you know, that's the thing, you know. So thus far, what has been the most rewarding or informational or even challenging part thus far? Like, in, you know, when you speak on like trauma, when you speak on sort of, you know, the healing of the Black congregation, I'm gonna use your terms. When you're working in that, there can be some sort of like pushback, or sometimes when you're like, okay, finally someone is speaking, you know, a language that often is missed and often is sort of suppressed. Talk about sort of what phase within your artistic journey that's been the most rewarding, informational, or even challenging.
Well, okay, that's a great question, and so many different ways that I could answer that question. I think the most rewarding thing I've had so far has been when I've had conversations with people and they've said to me, just looking at your work online, whether it's on Instagram or on your website, it feels different. It doesn't feel like just a work of art, but I feel that the work is much more than that. It's about much more than that, right? And the fact that someone can articulate that to me, saying that just seeing it on a computer screen and not even in person, that's so rewarding because that's my intent. My intent is that people will see the work, engage with the work, and see themselves, see their humanity of themselves, will see the humanity of Black people, will just see themselves within the work and walk away feeling changed in some kind of way. And so when I hear people to say that to me, and then when they say, oh, but when I saw it in person, when I saw it up close, it's even more profound. Like, oh, I was struck by it looking on the screen, but when I saw it in the gallery hanging on the wall, like it was even much more than that, right? Like, so that to me is so rewarding because it, what that tells me is that the path that I'm on is correct and I have to stay on the path and I have to constantly do the thing I must do. And if I just keep my eyes focused on what I have to do and not get consumed by other people and their level of success and what they're doing, which really it can be hard as an artist because you're looking at the success of your peers, those who you went to school with, those who are, you might consider your contemporaries, and you look at like their careers. And whatever the barometer is for success, you feel that maybe you haven't reached that success. That really can be the downfall. So like you can get caught up in, well, I don't have as many likes. I don't have as many shares. I don't have as many followers. I haven't shown in so many galleries. I haven't so many pieces. My work isn't being sold for the same amount that their work is being sold for. You can get so caught up in other people's paths, right? Like other people's journeys that you don't take time to really fully sit in your own, right? And be grateful for that. And so I'm constantly, so I would say like that is like the, if there's a downside, it's always reminding myself to focus again, to recenter myself, to say that my success is my success and that what someone else has achieved is for them to achieve. And eventually what is all for me, I will receive, right? And like, I just gotta make the work. I just gotta make the work and it will come. So I would say like, if there was a downside, it is not being distracted or being so hard on yourself because you see other people achieving what you want to one day achieve, right? Like it just means that it's not your moment yet, right? But like you have to constantly be prepared for it, right? So I have to constantly keep working. I have to constantly stay in the studio. I have to be ready for when it comes. So when opportunity comes, I can take full advantage of it, right? And so that's part of it. Were there like some hiccups along the way? Yes, where like you feel people don't see the value in your work, right? Or don't respect the work that you're making or see the need for it, right? If I think back to being in grad school, there were moments with some of my colleagues in grad school that, and I'm just gonna say it point blank, were racist at times, right? With like their language, behavior, right? Where you had to fight against that, right? Like, so here I am in a predominantly white institution making work. The program is predominantly white. I'm making work around the Black experience, Black trauma. And the feedback that I receive isn't helpful, right? It's destructive, which I guess looking back at it now, was the fuel to keep making the work, right? Like, because you're just giving me more reasons why we have to do the work, you know, why I have to do the work, right? And so that I think is also like another downside to it, right? When you're working in an area that's rooted in identity, that's rooted in race, rooted in racialized trauma, not everyone is going to receive it in the way that you hope that they would. And some are going to be convicted by it. And because they're convicted by it, they don't know how to respond to it. And so they respond in a negative way as well, right? Because it taps into that thing that they didn't know that was sitting inside of them, yeah. Right? And like, it brings it up. And now here we are having to negotiate that. We have to have this dialogue, this conversation, which I appreciate because I often say that my work, I want us to have conversations about it. I want you to walk out with questions. I want you to walk out and have that conversation with the person you came with or with someone in the gallery about the work, right? Like, because we got to talk about this stuff, right? We got to bring it up to the surface, talk about it, let's begin to work through it, because if we don't, we will constantly just keep repeating the behavior over again. And so that for me, I might have considered a challenge when I was younger within my practice, but now I see it as just part of the necessity of the work that I do now, right? Like, this heart work that I'm doing is rooted towards Black people, but it's also for other people as well, right? And how they engage with the work. And I would have said in the beginning that I was making work to teach white people about their humanity, to show them how brutal they were or are to Black people and to Black bodies. And that was my mission. I want everybody who's white to see this, to recognize that the colonizer has done some horrible things, right? Recognize it, own it, and let's find a path to move forward with it, right? And so, but now the shift has been, I did that for a while, for a very long time, which is also very tasking on one's, you know, mental well-being, my spirit, my soul, all of that, always constantly being in that state of arousal, of always being on the defense, always having to be ready to like respond to the comments, respond to the, well, I disagree. That's not every white person. That's not, I'm like, see, unless we know you're already defensive already because you said that's not everybody. Did I say that? Is that piece saying that? That piece is just showing you what has happened. I'm just telling you history, right? You know, kind of thing. And for me, that's when the shift had to happen. I had to like take a moment and go, you're doing a lot of work trying to educate. Now let's take some time to do some healing, right? And so I know that wasn't part of the question, like how I made all the transition around it, right? It was about the success, but also like the trials or troubles that come with it, like the tribulations in making the work. But for me, it's like so intertwined together that like it isn't easy for me just to say, oh, this is a struggle. Oh, this is something that's hard. Because with the struggle comes forth new work, right? Like it's about that as well. So
No. That was great. And the other thing, you know, I never complain when someone makes my job easier, because you've answered like one other question in there. And even in it, you know, it's the, you know, informational piece as well. Like, you know, learning that as you kind of closed off on, it's like, yeah, I gotta shift this. This is a lot. This is taxing on me in this way. And you know, as I was, you know, kind of touching on a bit there, covering some of these heavier topics, especially being someone that is, you know, Black person, what have you. And I would imagine there are real life situations that show up in your work or at least influence your work. That's like, damn, that was one of my friends, or that was a person I really admired, never really met, or what have you. Those things are there. You know, that trauma thing for people that look like us, I find really it's a profound sort of connection when you, at least when I guess, I don't want to speak for anyone else, when I see some of the stuff we've seen over the last, you know, say 5 years, pretty much since this podcast started, right? And being on social media much more and seeing things that happen to Black bodies or what have you. Generally, I'm almost 40. I'm numb to a lot of things at this stage, but that's the one I can't quite get past. And, you know, being a large 6'4" Black guy, it's like a reality that I have to live with. I'm from Baltimore as well. I don't sound like it. But I have to live with that sort of thing as well, and have, you know, that belief, that consideration, that arousal, as you touched on, just in real life. So having someone that's covering that is get at least assuages some of that. It assuages some of those feelings. It's like, okay, I'm not the only one seeing this, or someone is actually talking about it. And maybe someone who goes to see your work or work similar is like, I get it. I get it to some degree. And I think that's why work like yours and your work, obviously, but work like yours is very important, because it's like discourse, conversation. No, yeah, we don't do that. So having work that is a invitation for such dialogues is so, so important, especially coming from one of these cities where, you know, in doing this podcast, I do interviews here. I do DC, Philadelphia, New Orleans, and pretty much what interests me in these other cities, the base is here, I'm here, I'm from here, is you guys say these cities, or you write these cities off as being negative and violent and so on, but I posit something different. I think it's much more there. And I think being able to talk to creative folks, artists, creative thinkers, folks that are around sort of what drives the place, what makes the culture, I think that that's important. And mm-hmm. I find that often when we have people who, you know, got colonized a light, I guess, they kind of diminish that contribution. They want to do a rebrand of what it is. So this is Baltimore, you know, some might say it's gritty, some might say it's tough and vibrant and, you know, strong and all of the other catchphrases that you spend too much money on for marketing. That's what I see happening. But I'd rather hear it from folks such as yourself who are making this stuff and who are really saying, hey, I remember back in, you know, 2005 when this situation happened and it showed up in my work. You should take a look at it.
Yeah. I mean, like, and that's so true. And Baltimore is all those things, right? Like, it is vibrant, it is gritty, it is sometimes tough. Like, and why can't all those things be true at the same time? Like, Baltimore can be a multifaceted place, right? Like, we don't have to, like, be pigeonholed into one thing, right? And you gotta look out for the people that you say are, you know, counted out, because we'll come back and show you the real deal. Like, we will rise, like, and we'll be at the head of the pack, you know, type thing. So don't count out that, right? Like, don't make assumptions about people like that. But like, when you said that, I thought about the death of Freddie Gray and the uprising that we had in the city, right? Like, and even the language around, you know, not calling it a riot, not calling it whatever, like, but say, no, it is an uprising. Like, we are sick and tired of the boot of oppression on our necks and our backs. Like, get the hell off my neck. Like, and I remember, like, making a piece about that, thinking of what it means to, like, have to hold your humanity, the humanity of your city, other people, like, all of that, like, your struggle, your hurt, your pain, your joys, all that, like, at the same time, right? Like, I'm sorry, Black people, we are a peculiar group of people because we have to endure so many things at so many times all at once, right? Like, and this idea that we can hold trauma and joy and pride and sorrow and loss, like, all together at the same time in the same moment is a real profound act to me, right? And so when you talk about, like, something like in the 2005, I was like, oh, I thought about, like, Freddie Gray's, like, murder and how they took him for a ride, you know, in the back of, like, the police van, right? And, like, and as a result of that, like, he died. And thinking about how that could have been any one of my family members, church members, friends, I still think about that every day. Every time I leave my house, I think about the wrong kind of encounter, mm-hmm. take me out of here. The wrong interaction, the wrong misconception, the wrong whatever assumption could have devastating consequences, right? Like, life or death, right? And I remember, like, as an artist, I know how to speak through my art, right? Like, it's making a piece for you to look at, or you come into a space and we sit down in an environment that I created for us to, like, sit and talk and heal and whatever. Or it's back when I was, you know, at my home church in Baltimore and, like, writing plays for us on, you know, like, that idea of creating these productions to, like, express one's feelings and thoughts. And that was, like, I only know how to respond to stuff like that, right? Like, the way that I do my own healing work and my own deal with it, it's to make the work, because to be in this state all the time, since my work themes are this, I have to find safeguards to protect my mind and my heart at times, right? And sometimes I don't, and sometimes it's really hard and it's really labored and it gets dark at times. I can't find, like, a path forward, right? You know, at times, because I'm constantly combing through archives. I'm constantly reading articles. I'm constantly looking at what is happening as a way of responding to it, as a way of trying to bring some light to the situation, to bring some type of hope to it, so some type of, like, healing to it. You know, like, I've started going to sites of trauma for Black bodies, right? I started going to, I've been to spaces in New York City, in DC, in North Carolina, where I do like these pouring out of libations at particular sites as trying to release that trauma and that energy and that pain from it to free us, right? Because I feel that that connects to all, right? It connects us all. Like, I may not have known that somebody might have been murdered there or lynched there or whatever, but that trauma is released into our being as a Black congregation, right? And like, so I'm trying to go as many places as I can to release as much trauma as I can out of those spaces so we can all be free, right? Like, I want us to be so free. I want us to like be walking on air, right? Like it is my mission to do that kind of stuff, right? And so when I think about how people want to label certain places or people from certain places, like I said before, you have to be very careful how you label people, because those will be the leaders, you know, I think back to the biblical story of like Moses, right? And how Moses became the leader, right? You know, like Moses was supposed to have died, supposed to have been counted out of the whole thing, but came to like free people, right? And so like, don't count out places like Baltimore. Don't count out places that where you think nothing's good gonna come from it, because we will be your leaders one day. Like we will lead you to like a new thing, a new way of seeing, a new way of being, right? And so, yeah, I think about it all the time. I think about every time I'm doing something, I walk into a room thinking, you're from Baltimore, right? Like, you bring that pride with you. You bring all your family, all your experiences into the space with you, you know? So
I try to bring all of that with the exception of the accent, because I just don't have it.
And I have it and I don't care. And people always say, say to, say you, say do. I don't care. I I don't care. It's where I'm from.
The thing is, I don't have it. I've had people on pods like, yeah, where's his accent coming from? I was like, East Baltimore. And it was like, by where? I was like, further in East Baltimore, Lafayette Projects, what do you need from me?
Right. But right.
There's certain things where my partner, she's just like, you know, say Orange. I was like, nah. And I was like, Orange. She's like, see, you're from Baltimore. I was like, yo, kick rocks, get out of here.
They love doing that. I know it's the sidebar, but they love doing that. I'm like, get over yourselves. Is it jealousy? Are you mad that you don't speak the way I speak? What is it? Get off of me.
Just
and all y'all know who y'all are. So if y'all hear this, no, I'm talking about you.
So I got two like real questions left, and I think you see, even in that last portion, you answered one of the ones I had about sort of when is that lack, when you're talking about like kind of being in that dark and finding your way. I think definitely getting that sort of answer, because yeah, you know, kind of just switching it, getting back to sort of the reasoning, the why of it all. And I run into the same thing here, like, you know, doing this, like in theory, right? I'm going through doing, I'll be sooner than later at 1,000 episodes.
Wow, congratulations.
And thank you. I'm almost at 800 now, but to my point, you know, it's sometimes you were touching on it earlier, you do that comparison thing. And I'm like, oh man, I wish I was doing this. So you see people who are doing things. And I was like, at one point it used to be, why don't I have this? Why aren't people more supportive of what it is? Or even sometimes the guests that are coming on, like in theory, guests are coming on basically talking about their work for an hour. And a lot of times they're not even promoting the thing that they're on. And I look at it, I was like, if it was one of these other outlets that maybe not look like me, you probably weren't able to get into, you'd be gassing it up a bit more. You know, Baltimore Sun came up. Yeah, I love it. Yeah, but I, you know, do this. And this is mostly a self-funded project. Get a grant here and there, but it's a self-funded project. And that's not even the point behind it. The point is, as we were talking about, we're going to be your leaders one day.
Mm-hmm. So
my thing is to document, archive, and have people share their stories. The way that I do the intro, who are you in your own words?
Yeah.
That's sort of the way these questions are focused. And you see it and you got to get back to the root of it. It's like, what am I curious about? That's always sort of going back to the root. What is the reason I'm doing this? It's not to gas myself up. It's none of that stuff. I mean, I got a giant billboard right now, which is really cool, but you know, come on. Little stage of North Action, you know, it's all good. So I got these last two questions, and one I wanted to go back to. So let's talk about the exhibition part, because I want to get the, you know, sort of the performance component, because like, but I want to frame it a little differently. So you're, let's say you're building out sort of like, I want to do this. What is the, that initial thought? What is that sort of plotting in that process of, well, I think this fits, this sort of presentation fits, or maybe it's going to be sculpture. Maybe it's going to be the performance component. Talk a bit about that, like where you start off at with, I'm going to do some new work and I definitely want to have performance in there. At what point do you realize performance is a part of this particular body of work or this particular idea?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. So thank you for that. And I would say that performance has really become a really important part of my practice. And it shows up pretty much in almost everything that I do. Like it doesn't not show up, right? And so for instance, I just had my most recent solo show was up in Connecticut. And maybe a couple of months ago. And I knew for that show that I wanted to make work that honored my grandmother, sure. Right? And so I do a lot of work around ancestral knowledge and voice and things like that. And my grandmother, my mother's mother, who I grew up with, is one of my guiding lights, right? Like I feel like she's always walking beside me. She's next to me in the train, in the backseat of the car. Like she's like just there kind of like with communicating. She's giving me ideas, thoughts, or whatever, right? So I knew I wanted to do like a show that focused on Black women. And because for a very long time, sorry, I should not say a very long time, for some time, I had been feeling that Black women are not loved the way they should be loved. And I'm saying that to you Black people, to the Black congregation, that I don't think that you even love Black women the way you should love Black women. And so I was having like that kind of heaviness of just like, does you gotta love on Black women? You gotta pour out to Black women. You gotta like show them how much you appreciate them. They know they're amazing. So you don't have to tell them they're amazing. Just show them how much you care for them, right? And so I did this show where I created maybe 9 portraits on tapestries, on these wall hangings that I do. And it was all trying to show different aspects of what I thought my grandmother was about. My grandmother did not have a portrait at all. Like you didn't see her likeness in the room at all, but the space was in an old Victorian house. And that felt like a very grandmother-like space to me, right? Like it was like deep wood floors, these beautiful brown archways and doorways and things like that. And so I wanted to create like my grandmother's like bedroom, right? Like I wanted to like have like her dresser with like all the lace doilies on top of it. And I wanted to have like the bowl of candy and like all that kind of stuff. And I built an altar to her, like in one of the windows. And she had this mink coat that she just loved. And I called my mom and said, Mom, can I get grandma's coat? I'm gonna come down, can I get it? She's like, sure. And I sat in the gallery and I just mended the collar of her mink coat because it had come apart. And I sat on a stool on this wooden box actually, and I just mended it with like thread and just sewed it together. And for me, that was like my communion with my grandmother in that space, right? It became like this holy act of me thinking about how I'm trying to mend the wounds of the Black congregation. Here I am mending her actual coat. And the reason about this mink coat, right? Like my grandmother was someone who went as far as 6th grade, you know, in school, was a domestic worker in Baltimore. She took care of white children, cleaned their homes, but raised a family, put them through school. Such an accomplished woman, right? And this idea of this mink coat to me was like her example of like, look what I have achieved. Yes, my children are doing well, but I'm also able to acquire this level as well, right? And so the fact that I got to like sit in the gallery and mend it and sing to her and commune with her in that way created such a sacred moment, right? I mean, and when I get into that space, the people who are there, they kind of like fade like to the background. Like I don't even see them anymore until like I come out of it all. Like I get into like this real trance where like it's me and the ancestors or me and the Holy Spirit or whoever you want to call it, right? Like we're all just like having this great moment together. And so I thought about how sitting there mending her coat was another act of gratitude to her. Like I was thinking like, oh, grandma, thank you for your sacrifice. Thank you for the way that you took care of the family, for the lessons you taught us. Thank you for being an example to all of us of what resilience looks like and what it looks like to be proud and confident and strong, right? And think about that, like this woman who was born in the early 1900s, right? 50 years after slavery was abolished, was able to accomplish so much stuff. Right. And like, and I get to be in this moment. I get to bring your story forward to even more people. I get to talk about you in places that you never were allowed to be in or probably ever have access to. And I get to bring you with me. Right. And so I think about performance. I use the term performance because it's what we would use in the art world, but it's more like blessings, it's more like these offerings or moments of healing. Right. But I wouldn't say there's anything performative about it. Like I'm not walking with like any kind of script in mind. Like I know I'm gonna mend the coat, and whatever happens in that moment is what happens, right? Like, and I couldn't tell you all the times that I've done. Like I hate people come and video it or whatever, and like I'll go back and watch it and go, oh, I didn't know I did that. Oh, I didn't. I did that. Oh, I said that. Oh, I sang that. Like, you know, which is another part, right? This idea of like using my voice and singing is another way of me invoking spirit into the space, right? And my way of saying, hey, ancestors, I'm here. Will you come greet me? Will you come do something with me in this moment? Like, don't leave me out here by myself. I can't do it alone, you know, kind of thing. And so it does become a real worship experience, you know, and not worship like Christianity kind of worship, like religion kind of thing. Like it becomes this moment that is beyond just me, right? Like I feel like I, in some way, have kind of like, I kind of fall to the background as well, right? And like the stage, the platform is given, you know, to all of those laborers, you know, to all those ancestors, to all those who endured. It's like, I'm willing to like share this moment with you. Like here, take from, you know, stage, you know, like have your moment, stand here in the light, like receive it, you know, like all of that. So like even those kind of thoughts come in my head, I'm less like, oh, this stage is crowded today. Oh, this gallery is packed today. You know, like it ain't just y'all that's here. It's a whole lot of people here, you know, kind of thing. So that's something that I would say the idea of performance work has come up in maybe the past, maybe 10 years, 10 to 8 years, right? It always was something that I always did. So I used to do it like in private. I would ask the gallery, can I come and do a thing before the show opens? If I'm in a group show, can I come and do a thing before the group show opens? Just because I need to make sure that the gallery is set to receive the work that I'm making, to make sure that it's gonna be a safe place for the work that I'm making, right? Because to me that it's, the object is more than just an object. Like it has much more meaning behind it. And it's endowed with much more energy and purpose and soul and life than it just being an object, right? So like, I used to do that in private. And then something said to me one day, probably the ancestors were like, you ain't gotta be quiet about that. You gotta be proud about that thing. Do it out in the open. Like, what you ashamed of, right? Like, what you ashamed of? So I was like, you right. I understand nothing, you know? And so then it becomes a thing. Like if I'm giving an artist talk, I start out with a song. I'm like, come on, ancestors, we about to give a talk. This talk is just as much for me as it is for you, right? Like I don't do anything alone. Like yeah. This work, like I have just been chosen in this moment to do what I'm doing, right? To be the force, the vehicle that's gonna help the metrics go forward, right? Like, but I recognize this is not, like, my ego isn't caught up in this. It isn't like, oh, this is all Desmond. No, my success is caught up in the ancestors. It's caught up in, like, my grandmother who was, like, out there making provision and making ways for me. And my job is to just keep making the work, to keep fine-tuning what I'm doing, get better at my stitching, get better at making a sculpture, get better at, like, that's my job, right? Like, which is why, back to the other question, I really have to, like, stay focused on that and not get caught up on the external things, right, of what success is. Because when somebody says to me, oh, I feel moved by your work, that's a success, right? That's the success. When somebody says, oh, I felt something that moved me, like, sorry, back to this again. So the show I had out in New Haven in Connecticut, I got an email from a woman who said, because I did like this kind of workshop closing artist talk at the end of the show. And she walked in and said, I came and saw your work when it was open, you know, within a month, like a month or two ago. And she said, I walked in and immediately thought, oh, this is a sanctuary. Now, nothing up in the space had no religious relics. It had nothing. There were no crosses. There were no, it was nothing that would have said, I'm trying to have the idea of sanctuary come across. She said, I just walked over the threshold and immediately felt that I was in a sacred space. And she said, I sat there and I just wept in the space. Now, this is a woman who's not Black, right, not Black at all, but was moved by it, right? And that, to me, is success. If I didn't sell any other work in the show, for her to say that, that's success, right? Or like this, or like an elder who came to me at the closing and said, I can't stay, but I brought you these gifts because I thought I had to give you something back for what you gave to us in the community. I mean, and I mean, when I say gifts, it was like she had gift bags. And I was like, I have never,
your swag bag,
ever experienced that before, right? But like, here's this elder saying, I see you. And I see the work that you're doing, and I have to give back. I have to pour back into you, right? Like, it's the way we say in church, pour into the ministry, right? Like, she was pouring back into me what I was doing, and like, profound. So like, those moments, those are the real sweet moments. Those are the moments that tell me that the work isn't just about me and that it's out of my hands, right? Like for somebody to say I wept being in the space, how did I, like, I couldn't do that, right? There were some other forces that came together to make that thing happen, you know?
That is powerful stuff. That is, wow. I don't even know if my last question, I'm gonna get rid of that last question because that's actually the way to close out on the real questions. That was, no, it's great. And, you know, when I do this, and I want to just chime in on this real quick before moving into these rapid fire questions, you know, you're out here, I'm adjacent to, you know, sort of the creative stuff, like struggling for an identity. I know how I feel about what I do, but, you know, folks would deem it this or deem it that. But my partner reminded me not too long ago, and it was very helpful. She's the one that hears all of the behind the Freddie Mercury aesthetic and the curtains and all of that. She's the one that hears all of the losses. Like, man, I stink. I'm terrible at interviewing, all of these different things and the insecurities and all. And I just remember we were walking and, you know, sometimes it's ambivalence. So sometimes it's indifference, right? And we were walking like in Station North and it was a dude that was in his car. He's like, yo, is that Truth in His Art? Sup, bro? Love the show, man.
Come on, come on.
And I was like, you're about to get to an accident, my bro. So it's that. So when, you know, some of these different outlets I may have mentioned earlier might choose someone else who isn't the real guy, like I present myself as, or whatever that might look like, the people, those are the ones that I'm doing it for. And I struggle with saying it because it feels so hokey, but that's at the root of what it is. Like, being accessible, but with quality and not trying to waste someone's time. You know, I like folks come on here, just like, give me the real, what's the real? Like, yeah. And that's the way that it goes. And, you know, having those things like people wanting you to win or, even, and I have to do it to close out on what we were talking about when we first started, when folks hit me up and they're like, yo, so it's really good, man. Really high quality stuff. Man, you from LA or something, right? From New York? I was like, not from East Baltimore, baby. Every time. I don't front.
Right on.
So with that, I want to move into these rapid fire questions. And as I tell people, do not overthink these.
Oh boy. Okay.
They're fun questions, but they're, you know.
Now you made me nervous. You made me nervous.
They put you in a hot seat though.
Okay. All right.
I'm going to start off with one of the easier ones, maybe. I find that some of you artist types, you know, like, I don't really talk about myself. How do you get the word out about your work? You're going to say poorly.
So, yeah, I mean, like, poorly. Like, I posted to my Instagram page. That's it. That's what I did.
Like, here's a new episode. All right, you should listen, maybe. I don't know.
I'm like, I put out there. Now, all y'all should go see it because it's going to be great. Y'all should come to it. But, hey.
I'm not a full-time, like, you know, social media marketing person. It's I did the work.
Yeah. I'll make a post. I might make a reel, but I definitely will make a post and put it on my story. That's it. That's all I can do.
When you're working, like when you're in the midst of it, right? Like, you know, you got to catch up on some stuff. We got deadlines. We have all these different things. Are you more of an early bird or night owl?
Oh, night owl. I can work well into 5 o'clock in the morning. But you have me get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to go to work? Mm-mm.
It's the reset. I get up at five now. I'm sleep at 8:30. I feel washed. It's not great. Who are your favorite people to discuss art with? Knows how to get progressively more challenging.
Okay. My favorite people. I'm going to say they have to be my two closest friends from grad school, Orman and Christina. We get on our FaceTime and we just talk about art and our lives. And it fills me in a way that no other conversations do. So Orman and Christina. I love talking about art with them.
Okay. I don't like that you're doing well at these. I'm going to go to the last one. This is a challenge because it's kind of a two-parter. It's a little bit, I'm cheating a little bit here. And I'm very curious about it. I watch a lot of travel shows before I go to sleep at 8:30 because I'm an old person. What is your favorite New York bite and your favorite Baltimore bite? Like, if there's like, look, I need to get something that's quintessential, that's New York for your New York. You know, you might be in one part or the other that it's like, yeah, we do a really good chopped cheese. We don't do the pastrami over here. What is your thing? And, you know, what is your Baltimore thing? If it's crab cakes, I'm going to look at you with the side eye. But what are your favorite bites in Baltimore and in New York?
Okay. Well, I don't have an answer for you for New York because I don't want to say the truth. But I think that Baltimore has much better food than New York does. But I might be biased. And I struggle to find a place to eat. Now, people might come for me in the comments. And you know what? I'm sorry. But if it was New York, thin slice, you really can't go wrong with that. Most people make a really nice thin slice. Okay. Now you're talking about Baltimore now. I'm talking about a chicken box with soft potato ketchup, hot sauce, and a half and half. That is always going to be when I went home. Or, now this is not in Baltimore. It's in Baltimore County, but it's adjacent. Okay. It's the Greek Village chicken cheesesteak, french fries, and gravy. Now, I would drive, when I was at Micah, I would drive from Micah all the way out to Randallstown to get that cheesesteak and french fries and gravy and come back to campus. I didn't care. And I would call them in the car because they late. I mean, they slow as hell in there. So you got to call them a good 30 minutes before you want to pick up your food. But those two things, that cheesesteak from Greek Village, french fries and gravy, and a chicken box. Man, let me tell you, I am still trying to chase and find a place like that right now where it's my go-to place.
And I hear you.
I am right now, but that is Baltimore. Now, if you want to talk about some seafood stuff, ain't nothing better than going down to like Monroe Street to like the Crab Row, getting a bushel of crabs, and you at home you done put some trash bags on the table and you sitting eating some crabs. Now that right there, now that's a good time, but we don't have no crabs all year round like that, right? So it's like, but a chicken box, I can get me a good old chicken box anytime, you know, so.
I gotta comment. I'm a food guy, so I gotta comment on this. I gotta clarify. Thin slice, is it just cheese? Is it pepperoni? Like, what are we going with?
I tend to go for either cheese or pepperoni. Yeah.
Okay.
I probably take pepperoni over the cheese though, because I want a little bit of meat on something. Yeah.
And when it comes to that chicken box, right? Yeah. Now this is almost political. Western fries, crinkle cut. What are the fries? What's the fry situation?
Okay, I don't want Western fries. I mean, I have Western fries, but I don't want Western fries. Give me the crinkle fries or give me like the regular straight ones. Crinkle fries are the best. I remember like being a kid and would go to like the corner store or like the little cut in the basement of the house and be like, someone put ketchup on my fries, please. And like just have like that steaming hot bag of fries and the plastic fork. Man, you couldn't tell me nothing. That was like...
That's 10
on 10. Can't tell me nothing.
That's 10 on 10. And the last thing I'll say, and this is going to be the most like damaging for my Baltimore rep, I have not actually done the bushel of crab situation in my 39, in my near 40 years of existence. It might have been less than five times. I don't think I've really done it. I'm a crab cake guy. I make a really good crab cake. I'm here's the thing. I'm a civilized man, right?
I'm turning my head to you on that because something's wrong with you.
look, this is where my cred goes. So I go to New Orleans a lot, right? We have the same crab they have down there. I got into a beef with someone in a New Orleans restaurant. I was like, ours is better. Y'all know how to make them down here. They're like, what? It's like they're ours. I was like, nah, you ain't doing them right.
That's how I know you're from Baltimore, because we ignorant like that. We will say that. It ain't that good.
It's mid. Get it out of here.
We will say that.
Oh, man. That was great. That was great. So thank you for indulging me in the rapid fire and in the full like conversation. And in these final moments, Desmond, I want to give you the space and the opportunity to tell the fine folks, what do you got coming up? Social media, website, Instagram, all of that good stuff. The floor is yours.
Okay, so I would say, check out my Instagram, you know, come follow me, you know, like, that's the most up-to-date information you're going to have, what I'm doing, right? Like, I post it all the time there. So that's at Desmond Beach, just my name, Desmond Beach, you can find me. My website's the same thing, desmondbeach.com, you know, pretty simple, right? Like, ain't nothing fancy about it, it's just my name. Well, I shouldn't say just my name, it's my name, you know. What do I have coming up next? I can't talk about it yet because it's not official yet, right? You know, within the art world, you can't say you got something coming up until all the T's have been crossed and I's have been dotted and the people you're working with are ready to announce it, right? So, but let's just say, wink, wink, there might be a show coming up soon, sometime this summer, hopefully. Right. But again, I shouldn't even said that because now it might not even happen. Not because of what. But yeah, so it's. Yeah, like I just had some shows end or whatever. And so now I'm in the studio just working and waiting for the next opportunity to come, which it will come. Right. Just making the work. And then. Anything else I want to say, like, I would say to those who are listening, particularly the Black congregation, y'all, it is so important for us to do our healing work. It is so important for us to recognize that there's generational trauma that sits in our bodies. It shows up in our behaviors and our attitudes and our moods, how we walk through space. And we got to take the time to heal it because we got babies coming behind us that need for us to do the work so they're not doing the same work. Right. Like, let's take the heavy lift. Right. Like, let's do the work for them so they can live in a space and a life that isn't trauma informed, you know, where they're not acting out of trauma in that. And another thing, yo, Baltimore, I love y'all. Thank you, Baltimore. Like, y'all made me and are making me who I am. And I love y'all. And everywhere I go, I take y'all with me. I don't care. Like, I was just saying to a friend yesterday that I was at a conference in California. And I said, I'm from Baltimore. I don't know where you're from. I'm from the greatest city. I'm from Baltimore. And this guy was like, well, I live in B-more. I said, see, you said B-more. That's how I know you're not from Baltimore, because you said B-more. And that ended our conversation. Like, we couldn't recover from it. I was like, I'm sorry. But, like, we ignorant like that in Baltimore. We just ignorant. You know, whatever. But yeah, like I love it. And I think about every time I do something, I'm thinking, am I making Baltimore proud? Is my mama proud? Mm-hmm. Is Baltimore proud? Are the ancestors proud? You know, I'm always thinking about that all the time. Yeah. And thank you for the opportunity to sit here and talk to you today, right? Like, and to share my thoughts and ideas and things that are important to me and my passions and laughing and joking, right? Like, it's good to, like, connect, you know, with people, right? And have a moment and all of that. So I appreciate that as well. And support this brother, y'all. Like, support this brother. He doing stuff, like, support him. You know, share it, comment, you know, like, show him some love, you know? It's enough out there for all of us.
Absolutely. Now, that's great. And I'm going to close out right there. Thank you for the kind words. And this has been just wonderful. And there you have it, folks. I want to again thank the Never Alone, Always With Someone, whether it be Baltimore, whether it be the ancestors, never outnumbered. Thank you, Desmond Beach, for coming on to the podcast. And I'm Rob Lee, saying that there's art, culture, and community in and around your neck of the woods. You've just got to look for it.